This podcast is protected by copyright and not for broadcast. See rsn.net.au for more details.
Here's Joe McKinnon.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Talking Horses. It was an incredible day of racing yesterday at Rose Hill, wasn't it? So many highlights. One of them, Winx, winning another George Ryder Stakes at her final start at her home track. It was an awesome performance, but also left me, and I'm sure a lot of you, feeling emotional. She truly is an amazing horse. Hugh Bowman summed it up best after the race when he said she brings so much hope and joy to many people in need of joy. Later on the show, in the final part of our Monty Roberts interview series, I ask the revered horseman what his thoughts are about the champion mare. We also discuss a horse that probably never realised his full potential, the Grey Flash Chautauqua. Monty has some rather interesting musings about the horse. It's a must listen, so stay tuned. That's coming up later on the program. Also joining us this morning is one of the key players from the Hong Kong Jockey Club, Mark Richards. He'll give us his thoughts on the outcome of last Sunday's prestigious Hong Kong Derby and also the Hong Kong International Sale that was staged last Friday evening. But first, to yesterday's Golden Slipper. Godolphin ran 1-2-3 in the world's richest two-year-old race and landed it with the outsider of their team of entries, Kiyomichi. She's a filly by Sidestep, a stallion that once raced for the global powerhouse and now stands at Queensland's Telamon Stud.
RSN 927's Talking Horses with Joe McKinnon.
Time to reins hard at it, followed by Lawyer, then Pin Sex, Exhilarate and Catch Me. Yes, 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 and Tenley are last and second last. Kiyomichi at the 350 lead. Under the pump is Anaheed, followed by Vincero Valare. Microphones picking up on the rails. At the 200, Kiyomichi, two lengths clear from Anaheed. Microphone, wide out Loving Gabby. Lawyer with a big run late. The Kiyomichi's clear. They're queued up. Microphone second. If we try and giving chase, Kiyomichi in front from Microphone. Kiyomichi led all the way. Kiyomichi beats Microphone in the slipper and getting up for third in the white cap was Lyre, then Loving Gabby from Time to Rain, Anaheed, Cosmic Force, Pin Sec, Lankin Star, Catch Me, then Yes, 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 Vincero Valare from Dubious. Tenley didn't get into it with Exhilarate and Free of Debt.
That was yesterday's Group 1 Golden Slipper won by the filly Kiyomichi, a daughter of Sidestep, which stands at Telamon Stud in Queensland. And the general manager of Telamon, Joe Heather, has been kind enough to get up early this morning to reflect on the win yesterday. Congratulations, Joe. What a great result for your stallion.
Yeah, thank you very much. Look, it's a dream come true to take on a stallion and have this happen with these first handful of runners. It really is a great result for us, yeah.
She was dominant yesterday.
She was, and you know, hindsight's a wonderful thing when you're a punter, and there's quite a few that are telling me they can't believe that they didn't follow the form, the magic night in the soft ground, and even the good run before that in the Sweden race. So she's been a really, really tough filly the whole way through, and she just showed a lot of toughness there yesterday.
So Sidestep, her stallion, stands at your stud Telamon in Queensland. He actually raced for Dali, of course. So he stands for just over $7,000. What a result for him and his profile.
Yeah, it really is. It's fantastic for him. And yeah, he was the first colt home in the slipper his year when he ran second to a good filly. He's from a great family that's really good colonial, tough speed family. So it's no surprise that he can throw a good, tough young horse. But it's always great to be vindicated for all those breeders that sent mares to him in the past.
Sidestep is, of course, by Exceed and Excel out of Amir Dextrous. He raced for Dali, and as you say, he was runner-up in a slipper. He was a good racehorse himself. How did you come to stand him at Telamon?
So we had to set our business up last year, and we sort of to try and get a stallion in this stallion market. It's very, very competitive. So we approached Vin Cox at Godolphin with a couple of ideas, and one of them was that, you know, we had to try and identify a horse that was probably underappreciated or a little bit lost on their roster. And when you stand Exceed McSell and a few of his sons as well, it can be quite hard for a horse like that to really get noticed on a roster. So we thought he's probably a bit underappreciated where he was, and we thought the opportunity to bring him up to Queensland, where we think that his pedigree and the style of horse he is would suit our market up here. And they were lucky enough for us. They were agreeable to that, and we were able to lease him for a minimum of 2 years to come up here to Queensland to kick off our stud.
And how many mares did he serve last season?
He covered 57 last year. We were a bit behind the eight ball in organising getting him on board. So a lot of breeders had already agreed to send their mares elsewhere. So he had not a huge book, but still quite a respectable book by Queensland terms to cover 57 up here.
Joe, Telamon is located at Innes Plain in Queensland. What's the backstory there, and how did the whole thing come about?
So Telamon's owned by the Fletcher family, Dan and Ray Fletcher from Emerald and Central Queensland. They bought the property a few years ago while it was still under lease from Eliza Park / Sun Stud. The property itself has an amazing history. So prior to being leased by Eliza Park, it was Racetree and Noble Park, and it's has quite a strong slipper connection before yesterday. So obviously stood Success Express and then Mossman after that, and also stood Written Tycoon and Conceived Here were Capitalist and Winning Rupert and a lot of those really gun two-year-olds from that crop. So it's got a great slipper connection already, and it also has a great history of raising horses with Superstars Buffering and Zoostar both being born and raised here on the property. So we're quite excited to have a great history of a property like that tied in with an exciting young sire like Sidestep.
That is amazing history. And the Fletchers have raced and bred and owned a lot of top racehorses in Australia.
They have, yeah. So they are co-owners of Sunlight. They're co-breeders of Sunlight and co-owners of Sunlight with a great group of owners. So they had a fantastic Friday night at Moonee Valley, and according to Dan, an even more exciting Saturday. So it's not often you can win a Group One yourself on Friday night and probably be more excited to watch someone else win a Group One the next day.
What an amazing 48 hours or so. Where does this now position the business? I know it's very early to be speculating about that, but does this change the face of the business in many ways going forward? And what's the likely future of Sidestep and his future at Telamon longer term?
Well, it doesn't change a great deal. It's probably just exactly what we were hoping for. And it's a real hope that something like this can pull off and sort of make your business, and for us we think it will. The lease structure has sidestepped with us for 2018-2019 at the very least, and then we will speak with Godolphin and renegotiate and see if he gets great support up here this year. I'm sure we're a leg in to keep him up here for a bit longer. It's just a great way to kick off a business, and it's a great result for those clients that came on board and supported us in our first year of operating and got their mares in foal to Sidestep at $7,000, and they've now essentially got their mares in foal to a slipper producing stallion for a very good price.
And you do a great job too, Joe. You're on the ball yesterday putting together a press release that went up last night. You don't often see that. Joe, what's your background in the breeding industry?
Well, my first job in the industry actually was for Woodlands. So I started off as a work experience kid there on school holidays, and my first full-time job was there. And I actually used to look after the dam side of sidestep, so dexterous and many hands. One of those old mares were there when I was down there at Woodlands. And so it's a great sort of homecoming to have one of those beautiful old Woodlands families really help set our business up here.
Oh, isn't that fantastic? It's quite amazing your link back to that with Woodlands as well.
Yeah, it is. It is. And, yeah, it's one of those formative years. Some fantastic people that I worked with there that I learned a lot from, and some amazing horses that I was lucky enough to handle and learn from. So hopefully something there is going to help that continue.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing the story with us this morning, Joe. And once again, congratulations. Great to see Sidestep get such a lovely horse, and there'll be many more by the looks of things. We'll check in with you again closer to the new breeding season to see what you're doing with him.
Thanks very much, Joe.
That's Joe Heather, the General Manager of Telamon Thoroughbreds in Queensland. They stand the sire of yesterday's Golden Slipper winning filly, Kiyomichi Sidestep.
The results that matter. The Talking Horses Racing Run-Through.
A huge day of racing in Sydney yesterday at Rose Hill Gardens. The Golden Slipper meeting hosting five Group 1s. We opened the program with the Group 3 birthday card stakes over 1,200 metres. It was won by Avantage, a three-year-old filly by Fastnet Rock, out of a Zabil mare, Asavant. Avantage has a winning relation, Mora Malik, and was sold for $210,000 through the 2017 New Zealand Bloodstock Premier Yearling Sale. Race 2 was the listed Derby Munro over 1,200 metres, won by Crone, a filly by Eurozone out of an Almaher mare, Soft Landing. Crone has a winning relation, Cyber Intervention. Race 3, the Group 3 Mannion Cup run over 2,400 metres. Midterm was the winner, a six-year-old son of Galileo out of an Oasis Dream mare, Midday. The Group 1 Rose Hill Guineas, what a race this was. A great old-fashioned dogfight to the line, wasn't it, between the Autumn Sun and Arrogant. The Autumn Sun prevailing, a three-year-old colt by Redoute's Choice out of the Galileo mare, As Mina. The Autumn Sun has a half relation going through the Australian English Easter Yearling Sales, and himself went through the ring there for $700,000 back in 2017. The Group 1 George Ryder Stakes. And what a story this is, Winx. It just continues. Her last run at her home track, Rose Hill, and how impressive was she winning? This seven-year-old mare by Street Cry out of the Al Akbar mare, Vegas Showgirl. Winx has one more start, the Queen Elizabeth Stakes. The Ranvet Stakes at Group 1 over 2,000 metres yesterday at Rose Hill was won by Avilius, very impressive, a five-year-old gelding by Pivotal out of a Sunday Silence mare, Alessandria. The Group 1 Golden Slipper run over 1,200 metres, the world's richest race for two-year-olds. And Kiyomichi, the outsider of the Godolphin hand in the race, was successful. The two-year-old filly is by Sidestep, out of a canny lad mare, Wichita. Kiyomichi is related to winners Adage, Artesian, Costitot, Ozark and Talamina. Race number 8 was the Galaxy for the sprinters at Group 1 over 1,100 metres. Won by Nature Strip and by a narrow margin, a nose quite literally in it. Nature Strip is now with the Chris Waller team in Sydney. He's a four-year-old gelding by Nikoni out of a Desert Sun mare, Strike Line. Pierata was the runner-up, a four-year-old entire by Piero. All honours with him too. He almost pinched it. The Group 3 Epona Stakes was the final race on a huge day at Rose Hill yesterday, run over 1,900 metres, and Samari was successful, a four-year-old mare by Sebring out of Zabil mare Kumari. Samari is related to winners Ritzy Sparkle and Speranta and was sold at the Easter sales in 2016. For $150,000. And looking back to racing at Moonee Valley on Friday night, where we had the Group 1 William Reid Stakes run. The Group 3 Alexandra Stakes run over the mile. That was won by Princess Jenny from the David Brideoak team. a three-year-old filly by High Chaparral out of his Abiel mare, Glitzerbeel. Princess Jenny was sold at the New Zealand Bloodstock Premier Yearling Sales in 2017 for $120,000. The Group 1 William Reid Stakes run over 1,200 metres went to the filly Sunlight. She's a daughter of Zoo Star out of a charge forward mare, Solar Charged. Sunlight is related to winners Sheikah and Solar Cry and has a half relation going through the upcoming Easter yearling sales. Sunlight was sold at the Magic Millions Gold Coast yearling sales in 2017 for $300,000. The Group 2 Sunline Stakes run over the mile. The winner was Consensus from the Stephen McKee stable. Of course, they were the trainers of the great mare Sunlight. Consensus is a seven-year-old mare by Postponed out of a Cape Cross mare, Cape Cross, and is related to quite a few winners, Jake the Moose, Little Red Devil and Mongolian Warrior.
The Talking Horses, winner of the week.
Two further back to Redzel. McAvoy just starting to nudge away at Redzel, coming to the turn. Graff back on the inside and Easy Eddie is next. Into the straight. Nature Strip swings two lengths clear from Ball of the Outside. Jungle Edge the rail. Redzel's under plenty of pressure. Easy Eddie went past him. But inside the 250, Nature Strip's full of running from Easy Eddie coming down the middle into second. Then Baller and Parada late. But Nature Strip three lengths clear from Easy Eddie and Parada, who's really coming with a big run. Nature Strip's tying up. Parada's coming hard. Oh, photo! Photo finish. Nature Strip and Parada. Easy Eddie third, followed by Encryption, then Baller, Tribal Wisdom, Kaepernick. I am excited. Redzel beaten a long way out today. So was Jungle Edge. Graff was one of the last to finish. This is tight.
What a win by Nature Strip yesterday. Now with the Chris Waller team in Sydney after having been with the Darren Weir stable in Victoria. He was coming off a last start unplaced effort in the Group 1 Oakley Plate when he hit the front before fading. Yesterday he led again in the Galaxy and was impressive after being challenged right to the line by the Piero horse Pierata. Nature Strip was passed in at the 2016 English Premier Yearling Sales, where he was offered by Golden Grove Stud. He's now won 10 of 15 starts and earned over $1.2 million in prize money. He was a half-brother, of course, to stakes winner The Barrister from Group 3 winning Desert Sun mare Strikewine, who's now in foal to Savabeel. Nature Strip is the first Group 1 winner for Widden Stud's Quiet Achiever, Nikoni, who had an increased fee of $24,750 last spring and covered 122 mares. We're coming off a huge weekend of racing in Hong Kong with the Hong Kong Derby staged last Sunday, and also on the Friday evening, the Hong Kong International Sale for the month of March. Mark Richards from the Jockey Club joining us on Talking Horses this morning. How's it all been?
It's been a pretty busy week, to say the least, as you would well understand, Joe. But it's always good when you're busy, and it was a really exciting week, I have to say.
Mm. Well, firstly, let's reflect on what happened on Derby Day last Sunday. It was a momentous moment for Frankie Law, who's only in his second season of training. To win a Derby so early in his career in Hong Kong is quite phenomenal.
Oh, he absolutely is, but he comes in well recommended. John Sides, who he'd been assistant to for many years, was full of compliments for him before he even actually started training. And there was a good interview with John last week where he said if he didn't win it, he'd be more than happy for Frankie to do so. I'm sure he would have liked to have won it himself with that Waikuku, but at the end of the day, with for all winning the way he did, I don't think anybody can take it away from him. He's a very, very talented trainer, ranking in his own right. He had plenty of chances in the Derby, and he's come away with the winner and the fourth. I think this year's Derby in Hong Kong was a good Derby, too. I think it was good strength and depth, and I think the result tells you that as well. But above all else, you've got to say what a great ride from Hugh Bowman. So to come out of the gate where he was drawn, it did an absolute miracle to get into the position he was, what, three back, one off the fence. And I think that positioning through the early stages made his task an awful lot easier.
It was a masterful ride by Hugh Bowman. There's no doubt about the form he's in at the moment and has been for quite some time now, the world's best jockey, dubbed by many. The horse, Furor, he's had an interesting journey. He began his career here in Australia with the Chris Lees team. His first start and win was in a Taree maiden, so he's come a long way.
Yes, I'm sure there won't be too many derby winners that will start their career in the same way. But it was a horse that caught the eye the minute he arrived here in Hong Kong. I was one of the few that I think before he made his first start, he had to give horses as horses for the future here. And he was on my shortlist straight away. Just a beautiful moving horse that looked like he settled in very quickly. And even though he got beaten on his first start, you could tell he wasn't going to get beaten in too many more. It's just a really, really nice horse.
Yeah, he looks that way. To win a derby is some achievement in Hong Kong. It's revered as one of the races to win by local owners and trainers. He beat a very good horse in Waikuku, which you've already mentioned, and it had excuses coming off a slow pace from well back, and he'd had a hoof injury setback in the lead-up to the race, Mark.
Yes, it's funny. John spoke to me on the Wednesday before it, and he was really non-worried about Waikuku's injury. As far as he was concerned, it's just one of those things that happened. It wasn't ideal, obviously. But he's a very exciting horse in his own right, Waikuku. However, he got a little bit detached at the back of the field on this particular occasion. The task was probably too much for him to overcome. It's not often that Joe Marrero ever gets their things wrong. And I wouldn't ever be a jumping bagger. But I know a lot of people were saying that he was too far out of his ground. You've got to ride the race as you find it. And it was very obvious that when he asked the horse to pick up initially with about 800 to go, he was a bit flat. He hit a flat spot. That's just one of those things. It happens. It's racing. As I say, a lot of people are bailing back over it. But I think you'll find that both Parole, Waikuku, and don't forget the third horse here, Sunny Spade. He was only having his third start in Hong Kong. He comes from the other side of the world in the UK, but tremendous run from him as well. Behind that, you know, Dark Dream and Thorns, who I really just think was bound for a turn of foot. But those four, I just tell you how strong the derby was this year.
Furore was quite dominant in the finish. He looks destined for a very bright future in Hong Kong, and as we've discussed, he hails from the Frankie Law team. His four-year-olds have been dominant right throughout the season in Hong Kong, haven't they?
Yes, there was probably one or two that were a little disappointed with some of his others in the race, but what was most noticeable about it was those horses that were up there on the speed early, even though they went very, very steady going down the back, they weren't able to play a part in the finish. So it just goes to show you've got to have a turn of foot. You've got to be able to quicken to be winning top races. And that's what most of those first four homes showed.
Frankie, as a trainer, to have achieved what he's done so far in a short time is quite extraordinary. His future is more than assured in Hong Kong. What was the reaction from the locals to see a local trainer win? Because often we see some of the expat trainers dominating these major races in Hong Kong.
He's the first local trainer to actually win the Derby since Brian Kahn with Industrialist, which was a long while ago. There's a sense of great pride when one of the locals are able to do it. And I think the first time in a long while, they've got a really, really good trainer in Frankie Law to follow. He will become iconic in a very short amount of time here in Hong Kong because everybody loves a winner here. And I think he's going to be producing plenty more. But he really is. He's a talent that is well worth being supported. And I think they've got every right to be keen and happy about supporting him. He's done something that no other local has done for a long, long while. And as I say, he shows a natural talent for it. I think the time he spent with John Sides was obviously well rewarded. But it just goes to show that hard work and dedication do get you the right results at the end. And I think Frankie's a good class of that.
Furore's sired by Coolmore's Piero. It was a milestone win for that stallion as well.
Had a huge time, didn't he? He's had a really, really good start. I was almost wishing I'd bought a Piero 2 years ago in the Gold Coast, purely because I liked him, and he sold on the Friday night. It's a shame it wasn't the Friday after. I think he would have made a lot more money. But it's a good sign. I think Piero is doing all the right things, and hopefully we'll find a few more as well. But they won't be as easy to buy, that's for sure.
So let's now talk about the outcomes of the Hong Kong international sale on Friday evening. And as is often the case, I suppose, a lot of Australian and New Zealand bred horses were the most prominent on the purchase price list.
Yeah, very much so. It's fair to say that the Southern Hemisphere horses seem to adapt more quickly. The Northern Hemisphere horses often take at least a year before they really find their feet. So it's not surprising that they're very much to the fore when it comes to the top end of the sale. This year was no different to most others. I was really, really happy with the class and the quality of the horses that we were able to put in front of the Hong Kong Jockey Club's owners this year. And very, very pleased the way they sold. Obviously, Easter Sale was very much to the fore with a Written Tycoon who made over $1 million Aussie. He was followed by an Exceedmix Sale also out of Easter. It was, I thought, probably going to be the sale topper. He missed out in the end to the O'Reilly and a Snitzel. But I think we had great strength in depth. When you read through the sides that we had there, obviously a lot of them very familiar to you in Australia through Written Tycoon, Hinchin Brook, Exceed Mixel, Snitzel. From the Northern Hemisphere, we also had horses like by Kingman, Frankel, Scat Daddy, Dubawi. It was almost a who's who of stallions that you would like to have and have the ability to sell. So it was a very, very exciting sale.
The equal top-priced horses were the relation to Sacred Falls by O'Reilly, Lot 11, which sold for Australian dollars $1.26 million. And, of course, another horse that was prominent on the list as well was Son of Snitzel.
Absolutely. And I think, I hope they go on and into fruitful racing careers as well. Yeah, the O'Reilly was a full brother to Sacred Falls. He's gone to John Sizes stable as well, so he'll have every chance there, as the auctioneers always say. And I really do think he is a lovely horse. He's taken a little bit of time to really find himself, but he was one of those later maturing horses that really did start to come right at exactly the right time. And the Snitzel gone to Tony Cruz, and I'm sure that he'll get every chance there as well. I think, as I say, we can be proud in some respects that the owners and the trainers are very acceptant of the sale these days, and it's good to get them into the big yards nonetheless.
I really like the look of the Exceed and Excel Lot 15, which went through and was sold to well-known female owner Vicky Tang there for $1.17 million Australian dollars. And that horse was picked up out of the 2017 English-Australian Easter Yearling sales mark for $800,000. So you forked out a bit for this horse, and I'm not surprised why.
It was a gamble, absolutely, but he was a beautiful-looking yearling. He was a lovely, balanced yearling, and he produced exactly the same for the sale here. Obviously, they go through ugly stages, all horses do, between yearlings and making race horses, but he really had come absolutely right. He was my idea of being the top the sale topper. He just missed out on that, but I was one of the first to congratulate Vicky afterwards. I think she's got an absolute cracker of a horse. He's very attractive, beautifully balanced, and I have to say, I'm keeping my fingers crossed, but I hope I don't need too much luck with him. I think he should turn out to be a very, very good racehorse. He's certainly got the right pedigree to do so. He was a good-looking horse, as I say, when Henry Field Newgate sold him, but I think he just kept improving all the way through. Got a cracking horse on our hands, hopefully.
And for our Victorian listeners, the leading sire there, Written Tycoon, he featured prominently with results, a gelding out of a half-sister to Group 1 Caulfield Cup winner Mummify selling for just over $1 million Australian dollars.
Yeah, had about octagonal. Again, lovely, big, almost black horse. The pair of them, actually, Lot 5, who was out of Shabtis, and the horse you were talking about, Lot 23, they were very typical of Written Tycoon himself. I had somebody, Tony Williams is up here, cover, and he said that Lot 5 was almost the absolute spitting image of Written Tycoon himself. He was a good-looking chestnut, but they both had plenty of size and depth to them. They worked particularly well here in Hong Kong, Written Tycoon. I think he's something like 13 winners from 15 horses to come here. So, you know, when you've got stats like that backing them up, we're obviously quite keen to try and get our hands on a few in the future as well. But they are becoming a lot harder to get hold of.
Mm. How did you rate the performance of the sale overall compared to past years?
Listen, the last 2 years have been absolutely exceptional. I mean, just almost ridiculous when we were getting 10.5 and 11 million. I was a lot more comfortable with what we actually produced here. I think they were a good quality level bunch. I think 7 million is enough to be paying for an unraised horse anyway, in many ways. But the depth was still there. Very, very happy. Got to remember that the market here in Hong Kong isn't as strong as it can be. And if people haven't got the spare cash in their pockets, you're not going to get it out of them. But there was still good competitiveness, should I say, over the top lots. And we were pretty much happy with the way it went because we didn't expect anything more than that. More than happy the way it all went, played out at the end.
Mm. So how does this at all influence the rest of the yearling sale season here in Australia and your game plan there? Obviously, Easter's the big one on the horizon now.
Well, that's to be perfectly honest, that's already organised before we even get to the result of this. We'll be looking forward to getting down to Easter in a couple of weeks' time. It's been quite difficult going so far, but it never is easy when you're trying to buy the top end of the market. I think the yearling market in particular is very honed in towards those top quality lots, and there's a lot of competition. So we're just one of many that are still trying to get our hands on the right horses, but as I say, fingers crossed, we'll be able to get a couple at least out of Easter in a few weeks' time. And hopefully they'll perform exactly the same when we finally get them back here in Hong Kong and make the sort of money that the ones that have just sold have done so.
Mm, fantastic. And Chung Fa, significant weekend for Hong Kong coming up, the Jockey Club that is, with the first mainland China race meeting being staged. How's the anticipation been ahead of that?
Oh, everybody's been talking about it literally since Derby Day last Sunday. The first race will be kicking off in just under 2 hours' time now, I think it is. We're 2:45 our time for the first ever race from up there in Chung Fa. Five races. It's no betting or anything like that. This is exhibition racing. It really is going to be a great day there. Unfortunately, I'm not up there. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been able to talk to you here. But looking forward to seeing that. It's on a 15-minute delay here. And I'm looking forward to seeing it. The jockeys and the trainers have been incredibly supportive about the state of the track. They say it is exceptional. It is just something else to ride and to train on. These facilities are second to none. I mean, you've got to remember this is the first new race course that's been built here in Hong Kong for many years. And I think we've used all the experience that we've got out of the two race courses we currently have to put down a fantastic training centre. And something that is going to be an absolute pleasure to be working with.
I've no doubt. Mark, thanks for talking to us on the program this morning, and we'll look forward to catching up with you in Sydney for the Easter sales.
Pleasure, and look forward to it, Joe. Thank you very much indeed.
That's Mark Richards from the Hong Kong Jockey Club, reflecting on the many things that have been happening in that region over the past couple of weeks. The Hong Kong International Sale, the Hong Kong Derby, and of course the first mainland China race meeting for Chung Fa, an exhibition race day, which will set the tone for the future there. Coming up next is the final part three of our Monty Roberts interview series. Recently, the revered horseman was attending the English Melbourne Premier Yearling Sales, and I had the privilege of sitting down with him for a couple of hours to shoot the breeze. In this final part of our interview with Monty, he talks about many things, including the challenges of Chautauqua. He also says, remarkably for a man well into his 80s, that he's still got a lot to learn about horses, as have we all. How do you regard Australian horsemen at the moment, generally?
I regard all horsemen on the face of this earth to be scratching the surface of what we need to learn, including me. I make mistakes every day. I saw a mistake today that I made. My boots are muddy right now. And I was working with all the babies I advised on at Inglis. And I saw some mistakes that I made in my scoring. We make mistakes. It's learning from those mistakes that we have to do. And so I regard all horsemen on the face of the earth as scratching the surface. To me, our greatest trainers ever, oh, he was monumental, da, 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 as being a neophyte in what we need to know to really be the best we can be for the horses. And that doesn't put me in, I'm not bragging about me that I know more than anybody else. I have some idols in the horse industry. Charlie Whittingham was one of my idols, and I got Tobin Bronze for him here. Farrell W. Jones was one of my idols, and I had dozens of champions with him. And my wife and I led the world for 18 years in the production of two-year-olds in breeze up sales to go into racing. We led the world. And I had alleged horse of the world twice, won the Arc de Triomphe when it was the best race on earth, twice. And I'm scratching the surface. So don't count me as any smarter than the next guy. It's just that I want to learn more. And maybe the next guy who's considered an idol now needs to learn more too. I think we all do.
You mentioned the yearling sales, and you've been here in Melbourne for the Inglis sales this week, looking at yearlings and buying them on behalf of a client. How was that experience?
It was fun. It was an incredible experience. You wouldn't think that some guy, 84 years old, that has done everything you would think about in the horse industry, 52 disciplines I've operated in at world-class level, 52 different disciplines. How could he get excited about going to another sale? I tell you, I was on cloud nine. I was in absolute joyous condition out there the whole time, seeing good horses, some bad horsemanship, but kids coming to me saying, show me how to do better. Show me how to get this horse to have a better overstride. And looking at me as though I had information for them, that is such a good feeling. And I don't mean it that I know that more than anybody else, but by golly, I've been in this thing a long time. And if I haven't accumulated a fair bit of information by now, something is very wrong. But there's some hungry kids out there, and the next generation will get a lot better than the generation before. It really will. We're moving away from the old traditional horsemanship very rapidly.
What were your impressions of the horse flesh that you saw and purchased?
The impressions I have of the horse flesh that I saw, and then some that I purchased too, was that it's unique for me to see these horses in Australia with the big bottoms. As Dwayne Lucas says in America, I want my horses, particularly my fillies, to have a face like Marilyn Monroe and a backside like a washerwoman. Big backsides they have, and they can really go up the racetrack. I see more overstride on the horses today than I've ever seen, because I think early on the UK bloodstock agents really introduced that overstride walking to the world of horsemanship, and it didn't take long for people to pick up on it and realize that those horses take fewer steps in a mile than the average horse, the horse without a big overstride. So if you take fewer steps, you get less exhausted and you win more races. And the ones that have the feet going north and south instead of east and west are better, I mean across the body axis, or in line with the body axis. The riding of the horses in the races is going to change dramatically in Australia in the next few years, in my opinion. At 84, what am I going to say about that? How much am I going to change? I'm going to change as much as I can, because the riding is way, way behind what the best riders in the world are doing. And it's not just simply somebody's opinion. You can prove the anatomical challenges that riders are giving horses. You can prove it. It is scientifically provable that doing some of the things that the riders do here is costing horses distance or time or links. For instance, horses, well, you can just go there with that, because they ride differently in Australia. Anytime you see a rider come to Santa Anita in California and ride, he looks very different from the rest of the riders. And if you see a rider go to England and ride from Australia, they look so much different from the rest of the riders, or Germany or anywhere. And so if they look that much different, then why aren't the other ones getting closer to what they look like if it's the best thing? Well, it's not the best thing.
Mm. In a nutshell, what are they doing wrong, Jim?
Well, yeah, I'd rather not go into that because I don't want to seem like... I rode my first race in 1946, and I was a jockey. Second World War time, when the jockeys were off at war. So I've been there in the jockey saddle. I rode from the first starting stall used in California that had its springs on it, where all the gates opened at the same time. The ones before that had a thing, they pulled the gate, I think it went up or something. The starting stalls themselves, the barriers, are dead wrong. They're dead wrong. But they've invested so much in supplying all the barriers for all the tracks that they just laugh at you when you say you ought to change this, because they'd have to change them all, you know? But they're wrong. And I can prove they're wrong. And that's part of Chautauqua's problem, is the way the stalls are made.
It's a pretty traumatic experience for a horse in the barriers, isn't it?
Sure it is. Horses were created by God to be on a grassy plain somewhere where they could see about a mile in each direction and have grass in front of them, and to flee anything that seemed unsafe. They were not horses that would go into a tight place. They're claustrophobic to the 10th power. All horses are. And part of my work today was to cause horses not to lean into the rails in the barrier. But they do, because they want out of that place. And there's a lot of reasons why they don't go out of the barrier when the gates come open. There's reasons why they lean over in there and their feet are in the stall next to them rather than in theirs. There's reasons why they try to kick the back out of the barriers. And we human beings tend to close our eyes to these reasons. I don't. I keep an open mind and I keep my eyes open and I study, why is this horse doing that? But you're right. It is a traumatic experience for them to go in there. Doesn't have to be quite as traumatic as it is. But we tend to add to that trauma. Oh, when the gates fly open, just give him a good crack across the hind legs. Oh, good. And so the next time he goes in there, he's rolling his eyes straight back to see where the whack is coming from. Not a good idea. Didn't work. That's my life.
Winx, the champion mare, not just of Australia, but the world now. How much have you enjoyed seeing her race?
Oh. Well, when we watched Black Caviar, you know, everybody said, you'll never see another one like that again. And I tended to believe them. I was there in England when she raced there, and Black Caviar was the greatest of her time, and maybe better than Secretariat. I don't know. Secretariat's our famous one. And along comes Winks, and he eclipses, in one generation, eclipses Black Caviar. Get out of here. That can't happen. And I watched on racing.com, and I watched this morning this fellow winning some huge race here. It wasn't the Melbourne Cup. It was something else, I think. But he said, oh, there isn't a child in this audience that will ever see this happen again.
That was Lee Friedman when Mackayvi Diva won her third Melbourne
Cup. That's the one. Was it Melbourne Cup?
Mm.
What a mare. And there will never be a child in this audience see this again. And look what's happened in my lifetime, not just that child's lifetime. And who knows, maybe there's another one coming. Yeah, one thing about it is that Australia is a tough place. People are tough. They came here digging ditches and farming, and they're tough people. People of the soil, they're tough people. And horses that come here are living with tough people and living a tough life in some cases. And the ones that come through that are the toughest. And maybe, you know, it's the kids from the other side of the tracks that win in the boxing match and the wrestling match and the this and that. What is that game they play? Not soccer, but...
A football, AFL?
No, but yeah. I'm thinking of the one Wales is so good in. Where they have the ball that's...
Aussie rules.
Not Aussie rules.
No, Gaelic football.
What?
Gaelic football?
No.
Rugby.
Rugby. They bash one another down. That's Aussie stuff, you know? And there's no violence in that because there's a different color jersey on either one of them. And the rules are there. And it's okay to bash him down. So it's not violent. But it turns out to be sometimes injurious, if not violent. But Aussie people... And Aussie horses are tough. And I think that's where the major champions come from, because this one made it through that tough world out there. And me, I'm for trying to make the trip a little easier for everybody so that you get there and let talent take over rather than just being the survivor, you know.
We tend to try very hard to define and analyse what makes horses like Black Caviar and Winks as great as they are. Scientific testing, measurement of stride, heart rate, all of those things. But beyond that, what's the Monty Roberts perspective on what makes a horse like Winks amazing?
When I came here... Daryl's Joy was a big horse in those early days, and I bought him. And the vet turned him down, wouldn't ship him to California because they said his QRS complex was not good enough. He had a weakness in his heart. And my buyer in California, the man putting up the money, said, well, I'm not taking him anyway. And he followed us right over there, and he won $1.5 million or something in California. Made a fool of me, that's for sure. And we don't have the answer yet. And maybe there is an X factor here that none of us are ever going to see. I'm not going to see it because at 84, I'm not going to see much more. But isn't it a joy when there are people out there still looking and trying to make life better for these animals? I just love it. And I don't know whether we'll ever analyze all of what God does, or creator, or whatever you want to call it. Maybe it's a cloud of gases that run this whole thing. I don't know. But the creation of a species is a very interesting thing.
Chautauqua is a horse that has caused all sorts of problems here in Australia for himself, his owners, and ultimately his career has been put on ice permanently because of his unwillingness to leave the barriers and race with the field. I know that there were attempts to get you here to Australia to work with the horse. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. What is your view on Chitaka, if you don't mind me asking, having observed his behaviour and been close enough to those connected with him to understand what the depth of the issues are?
Well, it's interesting that you started this question with a sentence. I know Chitaka has caused a lot of problems for his owners and people in racing and stuff. Chitaka did not cause those problems. It's the people that caused the problems. Chitaka is a horse. He doesn't want problems. He's a domestic horse. If Chitaka had no mistakes made by human beings, there never would be the resistance to go out through that daylight that was opening up to him. None whatsoever. Oh, he just doesn't want to race anymore. What? When they pull him out of the stall, 30 lengths behind the field, he goes and wins the test. Don't tell me he doesn't want to race anymore. I mean, that is, anybody could see that. He loves to race. He doesn't want what happened. And I've seen enough videos that I have an opinion of what happened, but I don't want to foist my opinion on anybody. I think hundreds of mistakes were made. Chitaka didn't make this decision after all that, those years of racing, without it being a human-caused problem. Believe me. And I saw a lot of the human-caused problems on videos that they provided me in California when they were asking me to come. I would have loved to had an opportunity not to put anybody else down and not to even say that they made mistakes. Because the first thing I would say is I make a lot of mistakes every day. The difference might be that I keep my eyes open and try to learn from those mistakes. There are people who say, I didn't make any mistakes, it's him. And they blame the horse. To blame a horse for anything is like blaming the night for being dark. It's a natural thing. Horses can't make it up. The night gets dark. One time when I came to Australia and went did on a tour right across Australia, a guy that studies the stars, what do you call those people?
Astrologer?
He was an astrologist. He's still an astrologist in America. Wanted to come down here with me and go on the... His wife was a fan of mine with the horses. But he studied astrology. He studied... And I want to see them from the Southern Hemisphere. And he went right across this country with me. And I called him the day I remember hearing for the first time. To blame a horse for anything is like blaming the night for being dark. And I called him and I said... What would happen if we had 24-hour daylight? And he said, oh, my word, that would be the worst thing in the world. Why do you say that? Well, he said, first of all, it would take two suns, one on one side of the earth and one on the other. And he said, there's planets where they have 24 hours a day of daylight. No life there, because you would boil if it didn't cool off at night. The fact that the sun goes away for half the time is the only reason we could exist on this earth. And I thought, how prophetic is that? Mm-hmm. The night being dark is a natural plus factor in our lives. And to blame a horse for anything, they cannot plan to go against us. They cannot decide they don't want to do something, so they just, you know, dictate to us. They can't do it. It's us that make the mistake. And we have to stop blaming the horse for anything. Oh, he kicked the farrier. All right. He did? Yeah. What did the farrier do then? Well, he gave him a good one with a rasp up the belly. Oh, he might kick the next farrier too, you know. And things like that. Typically, people who are in the horse industry will tend to blame the horse rather than blame the human elements in the horse's life. And that's a big mistake. Mm.
That's Monty Roberts there. Wonderful to catch up with the legendary horseman whilst he was visiting Melbourne recently. And if you'd like to hear the full interview with Monty, you can go to the RSN website where it will be held. And there's also some questions I posed to him during the interview that you haven't heard on this show. So if you want to catch up with everything Monty had to say, why not go to the website? And that's all we've got time for on this week's edition of Talking Horses. I do hope that you enjoyed the program. Until next time, take care. Bye for now.